Agenda is the safety and security proposal, and I will turn the meeting over to the superintendent.
Thank you very much. If I could ask Karen and Bruce to come up. We brought to you last week a proposal to enhance the safety and security for our school district. I believe that this particular proposal, particularly the staffing parts of this proposal, are critically needed to ensure that our schools continue to be safe. We have taken the approach, certainly over the 14 years that I have been here, in that we try to continually analyze our schools, try to look at the safety and security of our schools, and basically try to be in a preventive mode more than a reactive mode. Worked extensively with the principals of both the middle and high schools throughout the fall to look at what our needs were, recognizing that we had the opportunity to increase our security staffing, particularly because of the increase in our special ed reimbursement. In working extensively with them, they have developed a proposal that I believe they unanimously believe is not only important, but I think critical for them to continue to have the safest possible schools. School safety is an interesting thing. There is obviously the reality of school safety, and there's the perception of school safety, and both of those two things are important. We believe, again, as I mentioned, that the staffing we've included here is the staffing that's necessary to ensure that over the next several years, our schools continue to be places that people want their children to attend. I've asked Karen Sino and Bruce Dahman to spend a few minutes with you, giving you the perspective of all of the principals. Also included in your packet this time, the actual middle school proposal that they prepared and presented to me with a lot of detail about why they need what they proposed. So I'll first call on Karen, who will be speaking for the middle school principals, and then Bruce, who will be speaking for the high school principals.
I'm here tonight to address two topics. One, how we as middle school principals came to recommend the funding proposal before you, and two, what benefits we anticipate should the proposal be funded. With such scarce funds at stake, you might expect that my 10 colleagues and I spent hours, days negotiating, competing, even bickering over the potential windfall. Not so. Within 5 minutes of our discussion of safety and security priorities, we had unanimously agreed to recommend the hiring of PBIS coaches for the 5 middle schools with a population of 266 to 499, Blackhawk, Jefferson, O'Keefe, Sherman, and Whitehorse. We came to agreement so readily and so enthusiastically because we recognize that these 5 medium-sized schools are indeed struggling to make progress. We also believe that a substantial investment in the PBIS model in these target schools has the potential to make a significant, positive, enduring difference in the big 3, engagement, learning, and relationships. A quick refresher. The broad goal of the PBIS approach is to prevent problem behaviors from developing and intensifying and to maximize academic success for all students. The model is comprised of these components: explicitly teaching behavioral expectations to all students, developing and implementing school-wide behavioral expectations, employing a continuum of consequences for violation of behavioral expectations, acknowledging positive behavior when it finally shows up, using data for decision making, and providing support for students with chronic behavior problems. If our proposal is funded, we would expect to see, based on results in other urban schools and districts, a decrease in disciplinary referrals, a corollary increase in instructional time, a decrease in the time administrators spend on disciplinary issues, amen to that, an efficient and effective use of scarce and becoming scarcer resources, an increase in school safety and perceived school safety, and sustainability through a school-wide approach. My colleagues are in the audience. Should you have specific questions about their specific schools?
Anybody want to ask any specific questions of Karen?
Ms. Carstensen?
At how long would we anticipate needing before we begin to see some impact on the kinds of things you said we would see? And it's, do you think that looking at it after the first, you know, in June, that we would have seen an impact, or is it going to take longer?
From January 08
right.
to June 08, I would expect to see some effect.
Okay. My other question is, looking at some of the materials you gave us, a lot of what it looks like these positions will do and what you've been doing at Cherokee is essentially training the staff and leading the whole process of the positive behavior. Is that something you also see as an ongoing thing, or once that it's established, it will be able to go forward without the kind of leadership that we currently are talking about?
I think with a focused period of training and leadership, it could be sustained by school staff alone. The last time I was here, I described some of the interventions we made at Cherokee, but I want to remind you, we do not have a coach in our school. Mm-hmm. We have a very accomplished sixth grade teacher, Erica Gottschalk, who is our captain, but we do not have an on-site coach. So I guess I'd say for that reason, we don't yet have faithful implementation.
If I can make one comment, another important thing that Karen mentioned after the sustainability of getting everyone, first of all, you have new people coming on all the time, but also the individual approach to children who are chronic behavior problems and the case manager aspect of this, I would think would be an ongoing kind of issue. One of the questions that was raised also was whether or not the schools that have an assistant principal need the 0.5 coach position, and my sense is that they do, and we could probably ask one of those schools if you would like to address that. Well, Karen is in that situation. Our assistant principals are there because of the number of kids and the administrative load that requires. So pulling them away from that, I think to do the work that we're expecting the PBIS coach to do decreases their effectiveness in what they're full-time regular job has been. This also frees up our learning coordinators to truly be learning coordinators and to create, and I think the two things go hand in hand. One is affecting behavior, but the other is doing a better job of teaching day in and day out, which connects kids to the classroom, which also decreases behavior. So you're in a not a vicious cycle, but a positive cycle of reinforcement inside the school. So.
Ms. Mathiak.
I'm wondering if we could talk a bit about how the target schools were selected and what the difference is between Priority 1 and Priority 2.
Right off the bat, we took Wright and Spring Harbor off the list, the two smallest schools, and chopped off the schools at the top. We're a pretty tight tribe. We talk a lot. And so based on qualitative data alone, we were aware that our colleagues in those medium-sized schools were struggling, not just to make annual yearly progress, but to maintain some of the time. So we decided to take a deeper look to see what the essential data would reveal. And lo and behold, lots of changes in those medium-sized schools that are stressing the students and the staff. So based on those needs, the fact that they don't have assistant principals, that they have so many part-time teachers and support staff, change in demographics, change in needs overall. We probably came to the decision so quickly because we talk so frequently.
Yeah, I think the name, the school on the priority list that stood out for me, and And please don't get mad at me, Ms. Enright, but it was O'Keefe, because I don't think of O'Keefe as a school that struggles. It looks, when I look at the list of the enrollments and the demographics, it looks actually like it's, you know, does what the neighborhood does. It kind of undulates a little bit, and it's about where it was a few years ago. But when I think about schools that I see students in front of us for expulsion, O'Keefe doesn't come to mind. When I think of police calls, O'Keefe doesn't come to mind. When I think of testing, O'Keefe tends to have a population that tests very high and also tends to be, you know, of all of our middle schools, more white and middle class. So that was the one I was like, it wasn't resonating, and I wasn't sure, but and I was going to take it on face value because I really respect your opinions, but it just, yeah, it was one that just puzzled me a lot.
And that's perhaps where that qualitative information kind of fleshes the story out.
And then could I ask, when I was reading the narrative, and I looked at some of the quantitative measures that the group looked at in terms of changes in demographics and so forth and so on, there was quite a bit of discussion about changes in the cultural diversity of the schools, in the socioeconomic status of the students. And so when we think about these PBIS coaches, are we thinking of people who will align with the changing demographics of our schools, or how would, do you understand what I'm saying?
No, no.
Are we thinking, will the PBS coaches, will they be coming from within existing school staff, or will there be special hiring initiatives? And if so, will there be efforts to recruit from diverse populations?
Some colleagues have already identified people they believe would be a good fit based on their demonstrated effectiveness with those populations. Others are perhaps looking for outside hires. I'm not sure.
Okay. And I apologize for if I put you on the spot with that question. It's just, as I think through, it seems to me that part of the discussion when you were here the last time really was talking about issues with what we might call disconnected youth. And so if that is, in fact, a significant part of the impetus behind this sort of initiative, then who gets hired for those positions would seem to me to be very, very important in the success or failure.
I agree.
I might comment that as we've looked at these positions in terms of hiring, we're looking at it very broadly. We do believe a college degree is important. Certification, not so. What I think from listening to Karen or colleagues talk, and this would be the same for the group that Bruce and his high school principals are looking at, are people who can connect with kids. That might be a social worker, that might be a psychologist, it might be somebody who's none of those things. But somebody that has the proven ability to really connect with students and reach out to them. So we're making it, our plans were to make it very, very broad and not require any specific certification.
Ms. Moss?
I feel like the idea of the chronic behavior case manager is a wonderful one, and I was wondering if you could kind of describe to us the duties of that person and how they would interact with the children and how you would choose which students would be on the caseload. I noticed in your materials you had listed a list of students and then they were paired with a teacher, I'm assuming. Was that?
They are paired with an adult. They're
with an adult?
All, they're not all teachers.
Oh, okay. And can you just tell us how that all kind of...
Our frequent flyers, kids who show up all too frequently in our timeout room. So ongoing analysis of who's showing up at what time, for what reason, for how long. They rise to the surface.
Will these adults follow the students throughout their period of time at school, ideally from 6th through 8th grade?
Yes, but in a school with the kind of mobility we have, hard to know how long that relationship will last. But that's the plan.
I have a question on the Tier 1 schools. They have a fairly good understanding of the larger schools and the role of what assistant principals and learning coordinators and security assistants do. But in the smaller schools, when there's principal and a learning coordinator, who is basically taking on the role of discipline? Is that the principal?
Absolutely.
And what types of things are not... Can you just help paint a picture of some of the things that then are not getting done in a timely manner, if they're spending more of their time on discipline, and what's kind of the landscape of the school?
Are you
from
an
administrative role?
What the administrator is not getting done because he or she is busy?
Yes, that is what I'm asking.
Oh, my gosh. When we arrived, we were talking about staff evaluations. That's kind of number one with the bullet with people, since the deadline for having them in for probationary staff was December 15th. So that's a big one. Communicating with parents, hanging out with kids in the classroom, researching, planning. The list is just far too long. It's everything you miss when you're just doing naughty stuff.
And if one of these positions was funded, is there an estimate on the amount of time that would be? You did mention decreasing the amount of time administrators spend on discipline. Is it? Can you quantify that once this kicks into gear?
I can't. I would hope. Oh, for a big number, but I can't imagine.
Double digits?
Yeah, I can't imagine though.
Thank you. Ms. Mathiak.
And please understand, I'm not asking questions to pick on you. I just think this is really important and interesting and want to really get my head around how it's going to work. When we work on expulsions as a board, there are some trends and issues that we'll be discussing later tonight and that we've already discussed. In terms of the types of things that we're seeing come before us, is there going to be an opportunity, or can you envision a usefulness of a connection between the things that we're seeing as trends and concerns and what the PBIS coordinators are working on?
Bullying and harassment certainly come to mind in middle school.
Yeah, this, one of the things that has come up since I've been on the board and also as a parent is the issue of kids doing things that are incredibly counterproductive because they feel a need to defend themselves or have protection. And some of that may be posturing, some of that may be a very real sense that they don't feel safe. But in any event, it seemed to me like in those areas, the PBIS people could be very, very helpful in avoiding some of the things that we're looking at now. So I just wanted to share that hope. And also because I know we've got a lot of principals out in the audience and wanted to put that out there for them to think about a little bit. And then the other thing is there a sense that the PBIS people would work with families and the community? Because it seems like that student support network, is that part of the picture?
Gotcha.
Okay, thank you.
I might make one comment about expulsions. The real target here in terms of behavior is violence. So trying to get ahead of that so that you're preventing it, so that you're dealing with bullying and harassment, you're dealing with helping kids who are prone toward violent acts to have other ways of processing that before it ever gets to that. In terms of the drug use and some of those kind of things that we get expulsions for, I'm not sure it'll have a big effect there. But violence is really what it's after.
Yeah. Well, for example, you know, one of the things that is on my mind, and I'm sure it's on the mind of other board members, is the issue of kids bringing things to school with them and then ending up getting expelled. They bring them for protection, either in the community or in the school. But they're the ones that get expelled because bringing something for protection was not their best choice. So,
I think we would hope to create. I mean, what we're trying to do is create an environment where they don't feel it necessary to have that at school. Now, if they're afraid to go back into the community and they feel that way, that's a little bit different ballgame. But we want to create an environment in which they feel safe and protected at school.
Mr. Winston.
Superintendent, a couple meetings ago, maybe even last meeting, you and Mr. Hartley had talked about some other options for middle school students. Is that still something that you're considering? And
I think what we were talking about was to increase the number of seats that we have available in our NEON program, I think, was one of the things that we had talked about. We're still thinking about how to do that. That's not part of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is part of, I guess, what I would think of as the overall plan. Obviously, students that you don't catch with this program, there's something else also needs to happen
and,
as well.
And the keeping the two things a little bit separate, the children who go to NEON are generally children who have mental health issues that are – This is really targeted to kids who don't. But the NEON program is really targeted specifically to a child who has mental health issues that may result in violent behavior that's not the result of harassment or conflict resolution or any of those kind of things, but the result of their own illness. And NEON is geared to that. And we are looking at whether or not there's a way to expand that program and gain more seats.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions on the middle school proposal? Ms. Mathiak?
Well, I've been sitting here listening to everybody, and I'm thinking that, and I'm thinking about your description of your process and what a tight-knit team you are. And I guess I would like to ask you, Ms. Zeno, to, if there's anything that you would like the community to know about our middle schools as we contemplate this. Is there anything that you would like to express?
They are dynamic, industrious, fun, productive places. We are not a wasteland.
I appreciate that.
I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Me too, Karen. Ms. Silver, I'm going to pass it. I sent an email to y'all today that I'd made a mistake on the chart that showed the FTEs per
yes.
student. For Jefferson, I'd listed them as a 0.5, and they actually would get a 0.1 of this. So I want to just pass that around so you've got it.
Thank you.
And
Ms. Cole?
I just had one quick question. The charts about mobility and how schools deal with mobility seem to be at issue, at least, you know, it's how some of the schools became the priority. And what I'm wondering is when we go to look at this PBIS program and how to evaluate it, does it directly impact mobility, or is that really a different issue? And how do you have any ideas for the board on what we can do with that? Because it does seem to be an issue, and that it really does severely impact some schools. It's almost an impossible job, and so I'm just wondering what your feedback is on. What are some things that the board should be looking at when it comes to distributing resources or becoming more effective in our decision making?
My understanding is that mobility is not factored into how much allocation arrives at schools right now.
That's correct.
A number of years ago, Cherokee, Sherman, and O'Keefe actually did a fair amount of research over a couple of years to try to lobby the district to, in fact, include that, and we weren't successful. We invest an incredible amount of staff hours inducting students into our school from other district schools, from within the state, outside the state, from parochial schools. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the only way to front load lots of adult time, matching students with other students. I have a counselor who teaches. He's assigned 0.5 at our school, and he teaches 0.4 of necessity. That's the role I always counted on to make this happen, to spend hours with a student, not just touring, but getting to know that child and matching that child with other adults. I guess I'd say that those support staff remain critical. Cherokee has always been in the top five. Typically, it has been the number one school with mobility. But without those people who aren't assigned classroom duties to make those connections happen, we see trouble down the road for lots of these kids who've been bounced around a lot.
I might address that from the district level. I mean, there's nothing you can do about mobility because that's just people moving. And typically speaking, when you look at school districts, the more dense the low income population is, the more mobility there is. But what we've tried to do as a district is, first of all, work very hard to have good intake and orientation when children come. But to me, one of the most important things is to have consistent approaches to the way you do things across all the schools, so that when a child moves from Cherokee to O'Keefe, O'Keefe looks just like Cherokee. The expectations are the same. When they walk into that math class, they leave Cherokee on Friday and they walk into that math class on Monday at the new school, they should recognize the approach. It should be something they're familiar with. The expectations should be the same. So one of the things that we've tried to do as a district over the years is, as we have become more mobile as a district, we have tried to become more consistent as a district, so that the expectations are the same as children move from place to place. And
Ms. Mathiak.
This is a mobility question. Has there been a change in where students are coming in from in the last decade or so, or is it pretty consistent? Are we seeing, about the same proportion of students transferring or moving within the district? Are we seeing more same number of students coming in from out of town, outside of Madison, new families?
This is purely my sense. This is not an empirical
We won't
analysis.
Put you note in. We won't audit.
I think the number coming in from outside of Madison is probably very, very similar. And I think they come in from very much the same places. We typically get children from Milwaukee, from Chicago, and from Minneapolis. It's a pretty typical triangle. And kids tend to move in that circle. I believe that we are much more mobile internally in the district. That we see kids, and some of that is purely related to the number of children we have in the school district who live in poverty. And so I think where we really see the increase is mobility internally, moving among the areas of our city that have low-income housing, and there's a lot of mobility in that area.
Ms. Kubza?
We just were given a document, another copy of the document on support staff, and I have a question for you, Karen. On how principals allocate for different support staff and, I guess, for teachers, and are you provided a certain number of people that you choose how you allocate? Do you allocate between support staff and teaching staff, or are you given this many guidance counselors?
The guidance allocation is targeted. I think last year was the first year that was the case, and the minimum is 50%. We're allowed to add to that I wasn't able to do that.
So just let me stop you for a minute. So when you say you add, you can add to that, where do you add from?
Formula budget.
Which you get to choose how you use that.
To some extent. There's okay. a fair amount that's prescribed now.
All right. So
psychology, that's targeted as well. It's 1.0, so there's, I've never added anything. Social work is targeted. Security is. Learning coordinator is, what's it called, supplemental?
No. Discretionary.
Discretionary. As you can see, there isn't a middle school without a full-time learning coordinator. Nurse, there was a time I could add to that so our fabulous nurse could stay with us all day, not able to do that any longer. And LMC, that's probably the other that's not listed here. That's discretionary as well.
And just at schools, can they also add to their psychology or social work with
yes.
the formula budget?
Yes.
Does that make a difference? I mean, do schools do that? And does it tend to be schools with higher needs that may add in those areas and then have less for teaching staff? Or how does that work?
I can only speak to the decisions I've made over the past 9 years.
And the middle school model, I think I, from what I understood last year, that was going to have an impact, give you less flexibility because it mandated at least a certain offering of classes.
True.
Yeah. Okay.
To clarify, you get, middle schools get an allocation based for teaching staff based on enrollment. Then they get a discretionary allocation that is, again, based on enrollment, and that's to really use for things outside the classroom. They get a certain amount of social worker and psychology based on the need, which is it's done based on the enrollment, but also very similar to the supplemental kind of thing that the elementary school uses in terms of the characteristics of the school. Learning coordinator, they are expected to have it. One of those discretionary allocations, I think, has to be used for a learning coordinator, is my recollection.
It's an informal agreement.
Yeah. We target outside of that discretionary is the assistant principals are based on enrollment. 500 and over, you get an assistant principal. So that's pretty much how it works. I think the most anybody has for discretionary is 5 allocations, and the least is 2. Is that right, or 3? I think somewhere in that range.
And security assistant is based on need.
Based profile. On need, and that's assigned from the security office. So that's not part of their
Does
allocation.
Does that change yearly, or is that pretty set?
It can change. It normally would stay in those schools.
And I don't know whether this is for Karen or for the superintendent. Assistant principal and their functions versus the PBIS coordinators and their functions. I mean, another option presumably in future years could be instead of having the PBIS coordinator, we have assistant principals at more schools. What's the benefits of each?
I might let Karen address that from her standpoint, and then I can talk about it generally the way I see it, how she would see the two being different.
Our assistant principal is my partner. Everything I do, he does. A PBIS coach would live in a very different world than that because we supervise, we evaluate, we lead all the important changes. What's the same? School-wide impact, modeling at a more micro level, probably. More coordination of students who are struggling despite our best efforts. More alignment with our support staff. Different animals.
It's hard to improve on that, but The assistant principal is an administrator who has responsibility for supervision, evaluation of staff. Would deal, generally speaking, in an individual may be a little bit different, but generally would be reactive to student behavior in a disciplinary way. There certainly may be assistant principals who are out in the halls and get to know kids and do those kind of things, but generally they're reactive and handle discipline, where these jobs are envisioned as being preventive. They don't have any responsibility for overseeing anyone else. Their job is solely devoted to modeling and coaching teachers how to prevent and to work with individual kids who need the prevention. So that's kind of how I would describe the difference.
Any further middle school questions or discussion?
Ready for Bruce?
Are we ready?
Hey, Bruce?
Absolutely. Well, thank you. My colleagues are in the audience as well, and we appreciate the opportunity that we have to discuss the proposal that we've had a chance to work with Superintendent Rainwater and Assistant Superintendent Nash a number of times now. We've been spending the last few months talking about school safety and school security and what measures that we need in the schools to help be most effective for our students and our community. Our discussion is really focused on a couple different areas, and I want to share those areas, and then I want to talk about a request. The first thing it focused on was student needs and student behaviors. The group that we're talking about are the young people that are very or most disconnected to school, whether it be academics, whether it be extracurricular activities, whether it be just social activities. They are very much disconnected to the school day. Many times they come to school, they're there, they want to be in the halls, they want to be there socially, but they have very little inclination to be successful in school, not because they don't necessarily want to, but many times they don't have the guidance or the mentor or the coach that's helping them understand what school's all about. I a lot of times will say they don't understand the Memorial Way, and I'm sure each of my colleagues talk about their schools that way as well. We need to find a way to work with these students that are not connected, the students that are most disengaged to our school. We talked about school safety, and you can talk about door alarms, and we can talk about welcoming centers, because those are all part of it. But what we really focused our attention on is people. I think it's very important that people, and we felt it's important that people build relationships. And that's what's critical to these students' success. We talked a little bit about our discussions focused on student transition. And I think you talked about a little bit here with Ms. Sino in terms of mobility. We see the same internal mobility from La Falla to East and East to Memorial and Memorial to West. But we're also dealing with community, our area communities, Middleton and Verona and Oregon and Stoughton, and then obviously nearby states as well, where students are coming in, particularly at quarters, particularly at semesters. And it's important that they don't get lost. And many times, these are some of the students that we identify as the most needy kids. And obviously, we have programs for a lot of students, but we don't have a person, we don't have someone in the building right now that's connecting with these students on maybe an hourly, maybe a half a day, maybe a daily basis, because that's what it takes. We talk about being able to look for someone that supports staff meeting the needs of students. Someone that's out there helping staff understand the needs of these students. At this point in time, we're looking to be very proactive in terms of school safety. Not reactive, but proactive. And I think right now we are staffed to be reactive, and we do a good job of being reactive, but I think we need to be number one in being proactive and making sure that our schools are safe. We talked a little bit about what this person would look like, and again, identifying a group of students that we might need to make decisions on. Who are these kids? And I think you can say, okay, we have student services, we have psychologists, we have social workers, but their schedules are just as busy as the administrators who make decisions, as the APs who are in the hallway, who are trying to do evaluations and leadership, curriculum change, help move the change or help move the schools in a positive direction. We ask many of these counselors and psychologists and social workers to sit on IEPs, to be involved with violent risk assessments, to just be involved in their day-to-day job, and they don't always have the minutes needed to sit down with a student and counsel them as to what happened in class right now. What happened and what do we need to get you back in the classroom to be somewhat successful? Because the longer these students are out of the classroom, the more opportunities they have to be disengaged, the greater chance we have of them being behavior and in violent situations in our schools. What our request is to hire an adult, and this is a critical position to our schools. It's a very important position. This person's going to spend a lot of hours connected with our administrative team, connected with our staffs, connected with student services. We don't have a name for this person. For no better name, I'd like to say this is an engagement coordinator, someone that's going to work with students that have a need to be successful in our school. We'd like to use the case model, case management model with students that have these identified needs. And what are those needs? We're looking at students that have academic needs, students that have social needs, students that have possibly needing a change in behavior, behavior modification, how to act in school, transitional needs, coming from another district, coming to a new school, coming to a community where maybe they haven't been successful before, or for some reason they've been dropped into our school districts during the quarter or during the semester. We look at students that might have truancy issues. We clearly are identifying students that could disrupt the learning environment for others. And I think that's a crucial piece as well. Not only do we want the students that we've identified to be successful, we want to clearly identify students that could be disruptive to the learning community, to other students' needs. This person would review student academic history, their school history, their family history. They would try to make connections with the family, with community resources, with mental health agencies. We currently have a pilot program going on at Memorial that we've identified with some community agencies, and we call it engagement. And it's working with a number of ninth grade students that have mental health issues. And it is, again, what are we doing to connect with those kids in this building? And we've been fortunate to be able to have that pilot at Memorial right now through the first semester. This person would schedule programming, build classes, connect with programs, select teachers. The goal for this student would be to engage and would to get some achievement. Achievement might be one or two classes right now, but we would want that person to be engaged. And so this person, this engagement coordinator, would have a busy schedule in terms of programming. We would hope that this person would be able to build a relationship with not only the student, but with the family, because family partnerships are a key. And we would hope that we would get the group of students that we select to be able to trust one more adult, to not only maybe be connected with the teacher in school, maybe the assistant principal, maybe a learning coordinator, but be able to be connected to one more person that they can go to and feel that they have a relationship with. The second piece that we talked about is increasing security guards. Security guards are really the eyes and ears of our schools. They're the ones that are in our hallways. They're the ones that are listening to students. Students feel comfortable talking to our security guards. They are building relationships. They are working with families. They are prevention. They are prevention. And they help many times with student achievement. They many times are a communication tool with our families and with our staff, with parents. Our size of buildings, the size of our buildings, the number of contacts that we have in a given day, and the length of time the buildings are open require us to have more eyes and ears. We talked a little bit about some tools for security. We talked a little bit about cameras and radios. Radios are a communication device. Cameras are reactive. They happen when something has happened. That's when we check the cameras. It's not a proactive. It's not a preventative measure. People are preventative measures. People that build relationships are preventative measures. The requests we have made are about students having the trust to talk to an adult before something has happened.
During the day. When I looked at this, and this happens to be an area that I've had probably as much experience as, I guess, or more than anybody here, and the four in a building this size is pretty much the minimum in terms of to really have the eyes and ears out there. These are people that are walking the halls, walking the outside every day, all day. They're trained by us. Luis Udice, and before him, Ted Ballesteri did an excellent job of giving them the skills to work with kids. We have a lot of kids who have issues in our school who are most comfortable talking to that security assistant because they see them all the time. They're out in the building. So we felt that four was the minimum number that we should have. If it's up to me, I'd go six or eight, but four is... Well, I can put it in perspective for you. Evanston High School, which is bigger than us in terms of square footage, certainly. Evanston High School has 18. They also spend $19,000 a year or something. So.
Yeah.
I think four is the minimum to get where we want to go for the future.
Carol, I also think we have to look at the mobility of students, and we have to look at the surrounding grounds that we have in all of our buildings. Parking lots, for instance, field houses, the space is there, and that's where many times we are most needed when it comes to our security guards. Lunchrooms are busy places. When you talk about Memorial High School having two lunches and 1,000 students at each lunch, that's a lot of kids to supervise. It's a lot of eyes and ears to try to work with in terms of being proactive in this. Students moving, cars leaving one campus and driving towards Memorial, a phone call away, it's important that our security guards are alert and noted that this car may be coming to Memorial for whatever reason. I mean, I think that's the impact that securities can make. And as Superintendent Rainwater said, many kids feel comfortable talking to security guards because they've built a relationship.
One of the other things we thought about is there are fairly often times that we need to concentrate our security assistants at one place. In other words, we need to move from 2 to 8 someplace because of a situation that we anticipate or something like that. With 4 at each building, it gives us the capability to basically pull out 8 security guards and send them to one site, still leaving behind what we have right now so that your building isn't completely uncovered, which is what happens to us now. So it gives us some flexibility in terms of...
How frequently has that happened over the last 3 months?
I would guess we probably beef up 8-10 times a year, I would guess, in school. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why you do that.
My other question is on the additional staff person at each high school. Now, what I can't tell from the data you gave us, I think, is that currently La Follette and East have the kind of structure that you want to encourage at West and Memorial. But they will also get an additional staff person. Does that mean that they will have someone who will go back into the teaching staff, or how are they going to be using this?
Well, of course, they have some flexibility, but what East and La Follette have done is taken a teaching staff position and used it in much the same kind of role, and meaning they're one short on the teaching staff. So in this case, we would put in an additional staff member and how they use that staff member, but it would get them back even with Memorial and West, and how each one would use it. I guess would depend on them a little bit, but I would presume they would put it back somewhere into the teaching staff.
Okay.
Ms. Moss?
I have a question about the, again, the case manager position. It sounds like that person will be taking on a lot of duties, and I was wondering how many students on average in the four high schools will that person be able to handle at one time? Like, what kind of a caseload will that person be able to handle?
I mean, that's pretty hard to give you a specific number, but if I had to ballpark figure it, I'd say probably 30 to 35 students that they might be trying to manage on their caseload on any given day. And of course, some come and some go, and some aren't there on a regular basis because of truancy. Others, because of the mobility. But, you know, generally speaking, as we were talking to Superintendent Rainwater, I think we could probably identify between 25 and 35 students in each of our building, probably right now, that we would hope this case manager would build a relationship with.
Ms. Mathiak?
I have a couple questions. How will students be identified at the high school level for this, 30 to 35 or whatever it's going to be?
I think most often they would be identified by the high flyers that are ending up in principal's offices. I think we would have to consult with our student services staff. I think as a team we would get together and try to identify what students do we believe we can make an impact with, what are the student needs. And obviously through this team approach, we would be able to come up with, again, what I would guess to be the frequent flyers, the ones that are most in our hallways, the ones that are probably not going to class on a regular basis, those that maybe are just hit and miss the school and that we have some concerns about.
When you think about putting this together and you have your new engagement and behavior mm-hmm. case manager, where would you see this person fitting in your organization chart?
They would definitely be part of our administration team, and okay. Now they wouldn't, because they have to communicate. And at Memorial High School, our assistant principals are the ones that are involved in a lot of the discipline issues, and so therefore that person would have to be part of our administrative team. They would consult with us. They'd communicate with us. We would identify with them. I just think that they would be one more person within our team that can make connections with kids. We're looking at them as being part of the teaching staff, but at the same time, I think it's critical that they're part of our administrative programming. Keeping in mind also that principals do the leadership, principals do the evaluation, the change of curriculum. So many times, some of our administrators are in IEPs when they really could be talking about a young person and maybe trying to get back into the classroom. That's where I would see this person fitting in.
Okay, and then I have a question for both you and Ms. Sino. There's an item in the proposal that discusses additional radios and cameras, and it looked to me like that was for the middle schools, not the high schools.
I believe there was $20,000 in for the middle schools for additional radios and cameras.
Okay, it wasn't clear from Mr. Downman's comments whether there were also going to be additional cameras or radios.
My understanding of the proposal, Ms. Mathiak, was that there was $100,000 there that might have been allocated, $25,000 per school, to be used at our discretion, and that could be used for whatever we felt most necessary. Some colleagues are talking about welcome centers. Some are talking about alarms on doors. I think that's just something that is probably not been permanently discussed yet, but I think it's there to support our schools in terms of what our needs are.
Okay, so the high school welcome centers item is actually more of a discretionary.
A school like Memorial High School, excuse me, Mr. Rainwater, we have 26 doors.
Yeah.
And currently our policy is in the morning, well, we don't open them all. In the morning we have access to about 6 or 7 of our doors. At 8:30 our doors are locked down to 3. And the reason that we lock down to 3 right now is because those are entrances. One of them is an entrance that we have to share with Jefferson Middle School because of our field house. The other two doors are immediately in eyesight of our staff. And so for us, it would be a 3-door welcoming center, because I don't know that we're set up at this point in time to have one welcoming center. I do know some of my colleagues have an area where one door and a welcoming center may work.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the location, within your building and the traffic flow in your building.
Okay. Yeah, it's helpful to know, because just the way I was reading it, it sounds to me like that item could be a little more robust than just welcome centers. So.
Yes.
And I'm not questioning the need for lots of different approaches.
It was really whatever they needed. That was the major thing a lot of it talked about, was how to concentrate everything into one place as people came in and out.
And we're focusing primarily on the four big high schools. Is there any discussion with the alternative schools, or are they?
We certainly have talked about them and have continued to work with them. Their needs are very, very different. My recollection is we do have a security officer assigned to the affiliated alternative group. Shabazz itself hasn't experienced the same sorts of issues. It's really designed to be preventative in and of itself. So we don't believe at this point in time that we need more support at the alternatives. We think our four comprehensive high schools are where the real emphasis should be.
Mr. Winston.
Superintendent, I just wanted to ask about the cameras. It said give middle schools an opportunity to add cameras. Do all of our middle schools have cameras now, or do none of them, or are they all planning on it? Or
I believe it's Senate only.
I think Senate is the only one that does. And it depends on the individual building and the individual school. What I kind of tried to listen to what their concerns was. One of their primary concerns was more radios when we talked with them. So tried to give them money to do either one of those two things as they felt was needed. Their buildings in all cases are much, much smaller than these 400,000 square foot comprehensive high schools. And in most cases, much better lines of sight and some of those kind of things. So, but there certainly are schools where a camera would be useful, or so we tried to put some money in to help them in that way.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Ms. Mathiak? This is just our pattern, so you get...
I'm sorry. I like to know answers. That's how you find things out, as you ask questions. About the radios, one of the things I'm just curious about is this a potential use for phones under the district cell phone contract? I mean, I often wonder about the utility of radios versus cell phones.
I think in our buildings, the radios are probably the right way to go. We have repeaters across the district. We can contact back and forth. I've thought sometimes about there is a carrier that does a walkie-talkie thing, and I don't know for sure how that works. But right now, radios work the best probably within our buildings.
And to talk a little bit about that as well, in most of our buildings, it's just not administrators or hall monitors that are carrying radios. We have at Memorial we've put a radio in each of our neighborhood offices. We've put a radio with our nursing office, our LMC, our guidance, because I think it's just one more step. A radio is a minimal cost in making those offices feel safe and feel connected. It also, particularly in our student services, when a new family comes to register, many times as administrators are busy and you're calling to get one in to come meet with the family, it's just as easy for the registrar to radio and say, I have a new family. It's more of a welcoming and it's more of a personal approach to things. So our radios are just not, again, for hallway behavior. It's really a communication tool, and that's how we use them.
Ms. Cole.
I'm wondering if both of you would mind commenting on this issue of increasing security assistance. And I do think that it is a proactive move, and that that I would rather go that way than continually be reactive to student behavior. And what I wanted to get your comments on is that sometimes when we add security measures in the mindsets of parents and the community, they start to think, oh, you know, it's unsafe, or it becomes almost a deterrent for community members to be more involved. And you had mentioned some of the case management folks working with families. And I'm wondering how you see us connecting more with the community, more adults coming into our schools and so forth, as a way to both build relationships but also to use our resources in a different way.
I think our security personnel many times are the first line of conversations that families have when they walk into our buildings. I think we need to keep in mind that in the schools, in the high schools, we need to make sure that we have a sense of control as to who's in our building. We're not in the days anymore where, you know, people can openly and freely walk through our halls. And I think with teachers teaching, staff busy, I think the security guard many times are that first connection to families and individuals coming into our schools. I think we have to send the message across that we're a center for learning, that this is an educational environment, and I think our security guards do that. I think the length of our day, you know, in thinking about what would I do with four security guards, I would space them out in throughout the day, because we have activities yet at 7 o'clock at night. Who's responsible? Where do those students go? Where do custodians go if there's an issue? Mm-hmm. And I believe it falls right back on the school and our school security, who's connected with us.
We want to try to add that night one.
Right. Yeah.
I know it's an issue in elementary schools. I've talked to custodians that even they are, you know, kind of apprehensive to be in a building by themselves late into the night. And I'm wondering what you think as well as far as that connection. I'm coming from this, you know, elementary parent perspective, and you know, you do get this kind of continued separation with your kids. But I also wanted to relay an situation that I was in, where I was invited to ride the Metro buses, to ride both a high school bus and a middle school bus with the head of security from Metro. And the funny thing is that I had a lot of adults say, "You're going to do what?" You know. And the other thing is that it was quite uneventful. And one reason why I thought it was quite uneventful was because I was an adult there that they didn't know. And they didn't know who I was or what I was doing there. And I was with this other security person. And it really made me start thinking about how, as a school district, that I think it's important that adults make connections with kids and that they get that message. And I'm just wondering how this is all going to fit into that piece.
I think I'll speak to the stigma part you mentioned earlier. We were fortunate in that our security officer, it's tough to call him that, I suppose, was an educational assistant before he took on that role. And so he had spent all of his years in school, in the classroom, in the halls, in the office, at recess, helping kids off the buses. And so the fact that his title changed was meaningless. He was just this friendly, welcoming, authoritative, fabulous guy who was there to help kids. Mm-hmm. Not a spooky thing.
Mm-hmm. I might address a little bit about the idea of parents, community members coming into the schools and taking on some of these roles, because we periodically get people who volunteer to do that. First of all, we have enormous liability issues in that case. But also, working particularly with middle school and high school age youth is is a skill that we spend hours and hours and hours training people to do. And if you don't understand the culture of the child that you're working with, if you don't understand the mindset of the child you're working with, if you don't have some kind of authority behind you with the child you're working with, first of all, the children aren't going to react to you positively. But I really believe very strongly that, the people inside our buildings that are working day in and day out with our children, trying to help them handle behavior issues particularly, need to be people who are paid by us, trained by us, evaluated by us, accountable to us in terms of what happens. Because you can have some very small things that if you don't understand the children that you're in that confrontation with and you don't understand them well can escalate into some very, very serious issues. And so we're very adamant about the fact that we want our staff working with the children in the schools. That doesn't mean we don't welcome and support people coming in and mentoring individual children and doing those kind of things. We do, and we have wonderful programs around the school district with various groups that come in and mentor individual children and do those kind of things, and we're very, very supportive of that. But to actually have community members and parents walking our halls and attempting to assist in that way is just something that we would really not want to do.
And Ms. Cole, I think also it's important that our security guards, I think as, for instance, our communities, the Memorial community, they respect the fact that our security guards are there and they feel a sense of safety because they are in the building. And I think they are welcomed as part of our school staff, and students that aren't supposed to be in the building, our security guards are very visible to make sure that they don't come in our building.
I just want to follow up with this because I think it just, I'm not trying to say that I want to deprofessionalize all the professionalism and training that's gone on in the schools. What I'm trying to get across is that we're now in this situation where we have to worry about things like liability, and we still call ourselves a public school. We still talk about our schools as a community, and yet it gets more and more difficult for parents and community to be connected to our schools, and I'm struggling with what is the correct role. It's easy to do in elementary school. It gets more difficult in middle and high school, and the biggest issue for me is that as board members, we go back to the community and say, these are your schools, and somehow making that connection. Maybe it is more mentoring programs, but not everybody wants to mentor. Some people, like me, want to ride the bus. And I just think that I want it to be a thoughtful process as we have these discussions about security, that we also remember that every time we set up this professionalized system, there's a whole set of parents that don't feel welcome in our schools, and that's a whole other issue. Parents that have English as a second language and so forth, parents that have had difficulties in high school. And I think it's important to try to figure out ways to keep connecting with those families and give parents opportunities, give community members opportunities to somehow give back and support the work that's being done in the public schools.
I just want to comment for a minute because having gone through the elementary and middle and high school, I do think that if parents are interested, schools are more than welcoming to continue to have you be involved in middle schools and high schools. And I understand, Ms. Cole, that you haven't gotten to that age group yet and that you don't have any children in middle school or high school. But when you do, I'm sure you will find that the schools will be welcoming you with open arms. It may be a different way, but I have never, with any of my three children, felt that I wasn't welcome and appreciated at the school, and I think you'll feel that way too.
Yeah, I would agree. In my daughter's middle and high school, there are many opportunities at many different levels for all parents to get involved, and it's very welcoming. It's very different from elementary school. You want to be there a lot until you realize your child really doesn't want to see you there. So your level of involvement be changes. It's very, very different, but very, very rewarding at the same time. And Mr. Winston.
Yeah, I was just wondering, Mr. Dahman, the demographics of the caseload that this person would have. Obviously, you spend a lot of time thinking about this, and there's students that, you know, you want to identify as kids that are having some difficulties and things like that. Can you explain maybe a little bit about the demographics of that caseload? Like, what does it look like? Is it students of color? I've heard of issues with girls having some issues, some difficulties, violent issues, things like that. And will the demographics of your caseload, will that kind of dictate the direction you go in terms of hiring somebody for this caseload of 25 to 35 students?
First of all, I don't think that will affect the person that we hire, because the person that we're looking at hiring is the person that can build a relationship with all kids. And I think that's critical, is the relationship piece and the communication piece and the ability to work with staff and parents and students. As far as the demographic piece, that's very difficult to kind of give you an overview, because that will change on a regular basis. But I will tell you that will be students of all colors. It will be African-American, Hispanic. It will be students of white Caucasian. It will be girls and guys. It will be a combination of things. Right now, I think you're looking at probably fairly equal splits throughout the group of people that we're looking at. And so, therefore, I don't think at this point in time ethnicity would be an indicator.
I think what they all have in common is they are the children in our schools that are most at risk of violent behavior and being disconnected from school and disengaged. Whatever gender they are, whatever race they are, the common identifier is they're disengaged, and that's playing out into not only poor academic performance, but also risk of disrupting the school and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, and the reason why I just say that is obviously if you have a student that's not connected, somehow there needs to be a connection, and maybe the issue for that person will be gender. Maybe it will be race. Maybe it will be just because the person looks cool and has a nice tie on. I mean, you know, those kind of things. So.
And one of the things that you want these people to do, I think, is you want to build up. You want them to build up access to all kinds of organizations and people that if this is a child who has a certain characteristic that. If I can't reach that child, maybe I can connect that child to somebody that can, and then play out from there. So that it's
okay.
I think it's also a person, Mr. Weston, that's going to connect with resources in our building. Could be an athletic coach. Could be a minority services coordinator.
Yeah.
It could be a case manager in our ELL programs. This might be the first person that they build a connection with. But how can I get you involved? It might be intramural sports.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just going to follow up, because I hadn't heard anyone talk about, like, you know, minority services coordinators, that position, or even like adding on to teachers' contracts. A few years ago we had talked about, not this particular situation, but that's an option to add on to teachers' contracts, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, we do that when we have like a piece of an allocation and you can't hire a piece, you know, you need a one period physics teacher, and I've got a five period physics teacher over here, and I add a sixth period and pay them extra. That's the situation which we do that.
You can't do that with any other situation that we have, like a situation like this.
Well, we could, but we don't have any money.
Okay.
Well, when you add duties, you have to pay them.
Not yet. So one of the other things I would, you know, and this is going to be memorial, but one of the things that I would look at this case manager doing as well is connecting to after-school programs, not only athletics and extracurricular clubs, but we have our LMC is open in our after-school learning center. Mm-hmm. We are right now averaging 85 to 90 students per night. And what we've been able to do is not only bring in some of our high school staff that are volunteering to work it, but also to bring in the Aspira program, the People program, the MATC Pre-Collegiate Minority program, and all these people are in the LMC as tutors. It's another way of making connections with kids after school when they may not have a place to go right now.
Absolutely. And is that something that, in terms of, you said that you may bring up a couple positions for Fund 80 through security, is, again, what Mr. Diamond was talking about, something else that would add on to that or enhance, not just, again, not just security, but, again, that engagement piece of trying to...
I think some of that's funded by MSCR. Some of it's funded out of the school. A lot of it's volunteer. I mean, we certainly have extra duty positions that are paid after school for clubs. We also have a lot of volunteer, both from the community and from the teaching staffs.
Don't forget Schools of Hope. Urban League has played a huge role in many of our schools.
And they're working right now on trying to now expand into the ninth grade and work with transitioning kids into the ninth grade. So,
thank you.
Mr. Carl Smith.
I want to briefly speak to what we're talking about with preventative and reactionary measures. And I think we all agree that... you know, we'd like to, if possible, prevent things from happening rather than react to things that have already happened. And one of the things I'd like to testify to is the role that security guards play in a school environment, which I think is sometimes misconstrued, at least by me, in that I had imagined a security guard as someone who will see a fight or something like that and break it up. But And they certainly do that, and that's certainly a necessary step. But I know in my everyday school life, the majority of the interaction that I see taking place in the hallways that involves security guards is what you're talking about with relationship building, and that these students. I mean, it's interesting that students feel so comfortable with a security guard, if you think about it. But there's a level of relationship there that I think is really positive, and I think it's a really positive step. So I'd just like to briefly testify to that. The other thing I wanted to speak about was when we're talking about identifying students towards which to devote the resources that we have here to allocate, what I see as critical is the time frame, the point at which you do that, and what I think is interesting in this situation is the line between preventative and reactionary measures becomes blurred when you start talking about a student who's a frequent flyer, right, who at this point has been in a principal's office or in a timeout room numerous times. At this point, you are reacting, right? You are preventing future incidents, yes, but you are reacting to something, to essentially a failure on our part to engage that student. So what I would encourage us to look at is taking steps to identify as early as possible students who might be in need of help. And before they start showing up in the principal's office every other day, and I think the staff and the resources in this proposal will allow us to do that to a fuller extent.
Ms. Carstensen,
I just wanted to kind of provide a little longer perspective on some of the issues that we've been talking about, having had some exposure to middle schools since about 1984. I think that it's important to recognize that much of what we're seeing in our middle schools is not new. We have had periods of greater or lesser disruption, and it seems to be almost cyclical. I don't think it's any worse now than there have been periods before. I think that what is different is our recognition that it is very important to respond and respond proactively, and rather than punitively, get at the reasons why things are happening, and so that we can solve them and move on. I also think that the role of the parent and the community and the school continues to be very important. But particularly at middle school, more so at middle school, I think, than anywhere else, but also at high school, there's a real difference between coming in to be a volunteer in the school or to be part of the school and trying to be a functioning in the school in terms of handling students who do not know you and you do not know them. In elementary school, you can become an authority figure just by the fact that you walk in and you're an adult. That's not true at middle school. It's not true at high school. And that's why we always have to be careful of the role that adults are playing as they come in, and why the training of staff is so critical. And we have seen it ourselves in some of the expulsion issues, a feeling that sometimes staff has not handled the situation as we might have desired, and that instead of resolving a problem, it tended to escalate. And how you deal with kids who are emotional and in critical situations is very, very difficult and takes a lot of skill. I think that we sometimes don't recognize how difficult that can be. Though any of us who've had teenagers know that sometimes you don't make the right decisions, even if it's your own kid, let alone the other kids. But I do think that it's important to keep that perspective, to understand there is a role for the community, but also that there is that in working with students, the skill and training of how you deal with kids at that particular age level is important if it's going to be productive. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Okay. Time check?
10:05. I want to thank certainly all of our principals for being here, and Bruce and Karen particularly, and I'll close up our part of it by saying this. I really believe, as I look forward to the future, that this is one of the most important things that we've brought before you. To be sure that, in fact, we're able to get kids connected to school and prevent the kinds of issues that lead to expulsion or lead to dropout is critical, because the consequences for both the school district in terms of perception, but also for each one of those individual children, is devastating. And so I really encourage you all to think about this carefully and support it, because I think it is one of the most important things that we've brought before you. And it comes from the people who are on the ground every single day trying to lead this and move it forward. So thank you all.
Before we move to discussion and then vote, on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank both of you and thank everyone in the audience who has not only taken the time to put these proposals together, but for everything, again, that you do on a daily basis for all of our students. It truly is appreciated, and I'm in awe of what you do on a daily basis. It's pretty darn impressive, and it really is appreciated. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You'll have to excuse. We keep looking back here because we think there's an animal behind that curtain. Something keeps squeaking, and there's something alive back there. So I'm sorry if we have not been paying attention.
Is that part of your job description?
I want to thank you for mentioning that, because we had an email the other day about our brand new curtains,
right.
And I'm looking at the rip in the curtain. And
well, they sewed the rip. They used to have duct tape keeping.
We're going
to
get a new superintendent anyway, so if he never comes out. I'm sorry, I had to do it.
You're the guy. firefighter. I'm trying to sacrifice.
Don't go, man.
All right. Yeah. Every little bit counts.
Before we move to discussion on the vote, because of the time after 10 o'clock, Ms. Mathiak is having knee surgery tomorrow, so she is going to be leaving shortly. We thought it would be best if we postpone the expulsion discussion until a January date. And I apologize to those of you that have been here for this topic, but Ms. Mathiak would like to be involved.
Ms. Wilson.
We're sorry, we just made that decision. So with that, we can move to further discussion on the safety and security proposal. I believe there is a motion.
You want me to make a motion?
Go for it.
All right. I move that the 2007-2008 MMSD budget be amended to authorize the expenditure of $720,500 for the safety and security purposes as outlined in the safety and security proposal identified as Appendix JJJ612. With said $720,500 expenditure be funded by transferring $376,955 from the Fund 10 Reserve for Contingencies account and $343,545 from the Fund 10 Salary Savings account.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Ms. Kubsa.
The presentations tonight were very, very good. And obviously, safety and security have to be a very high priority for the district. And for me, on the items, some of them clearly stand out as of very, very high priority. The four high school engagement and behavior case managers, the PBS coordinators for Tier 1 in particular, and I'm persuaded by the high school security assistants, although I guess as the highest priority, I'd like to see one per school. I guess my hesitancy in the entire proposal is that when you have money, you need to prioritize. Obviously, that's what we do in the budget all the time. And here we're focusing on one particular aspect, and I don't know whether we've given – I don't feel I, as a board member, have had enough time to think about some of the other items where I think funds – could or should be expended. What I would prefer to do tonight is approve the four high school engagement counselors, the PBIS coordinators for the Tier 1 schools, and one high school safety security assistant for each school, and approve that tonight and leave open the remainder of the proposal until a further meeting when we could consider just whether there are some other items just to allow us to do some more of the prioritization. And we may come to this conclusion, but I would just like a little bit more time for those other items.
So could you repeat what you suggest that we approve tonight?
If you look at the chart, the first item that we approve that, the four high school engagement behavior case managers. The next item that we instead approve what's on the second page is Tier 1. So that's $175,000 on the PBIS coordinators. And then for the high school security assistance, at this time, approve one per school. So in my calculations here, I think that would be a total tonight, if we were to do this, $409,000. And that would mean that there would be $311,500 remaining for a further discussion.
Can I just ask, in terms of further discussion, what were you thinking about, like, in further discussion? Or can
I was really thinking about asking the district or asking the administration if there's other things that we want to consider as far as funding. And I don't want to presume what that might be. I mean, obviously, there was one topic that was brought to us at the last meeting, and that may not be doable, but there may be other things. So I don't want to presume what it should be.
Superintendent.
Certainly, whatever the board chooses to do, this is our highest priority, and I would have, after spending time with the principals during this course of this fall, I would have proposed to add in the next budget and cut if I had to do it. I think it's that important. But however the board wants to approach it is fine. But for us, this is absolutely our highest priority.
Ms. Carstensen, Ms. Mathiak.
I think I feel most comfortable supporting Lori's proposal. I understand the importance, and I really thought that the presentation was very helpful, and in terms of explaining how this will work. I guess I'm cautious here, because anything we add on, we have to really look at in terms of the overall budget and how that's going to play out, not only next year but in succeeding years. And I do think that the engagement in case managers at the high school and the PBIS coordinators at the top five middle schools would be my most critical positions. And I do want to say one thing, just as a point of information. It's not meant for an argument or anything, but I took a look at both income and ethnicity or racial demographics for O'Keefe. And, you know, O'Keefe is actually much more typical of the district. In other words, it's right about at the district average in both of those situations than it has been up to now. And I think part of that is we made some changes in their attendance area, and so it is it has about 40% of its students that are low income, which I think is very similar to Cherokee. It's a little below Cherokee, but it is less of an outlier than it used to be, or it was more recently. And I think that I kind of want to see how these positions work out as we look at what needs to be done next year. And I think that, again, on the security, I feel more comfortable adding one per school at this point and then thinking about it before I go forward beyond that.
Ms. Mathiak?
I feel very grateful to Ms. Kubza for outlining some of the options that she would feel comfortable pursuing, because they tend to align with some of the questions that I have. I'm ready to go forward with parts of this, but I'm not ready to, you know, I'd prefer not to go forward with others, in part because we'd had some exchanges about alternative or looking at ways to finance some of the things that are more facilities issues than they are, you know, staffing and personnel issues. And I would like to keep trying to work on that and see what we can come up with. And also, you know, if we're I guess I would like to see more of a budget proposal for a couple of these pieces, particularly the Welcome Center piece. And the other piece is that at the same time, I feel like for years we've not talked a lot about how our high schools are doing, and we've not talked a lot about how our middle schools are doing, and we have some wonderful professionals out in the audience who have come to us and asked us to do some things that would make their schools more safe and successful than they feel they currently are. And so I want to respect that. So I would like to do to follow Ms. Carstensen in saying that I would feel comfortable supporting what Ms. Kubsa has proposed and looking at the rest of it, but this would at least get the ball rolling on some pretty important pieces of this proposal.
Just one comment. The staffing was the most important to us, not the welcome centers and things.
I disagree a little bit. I'd like to see the two security assistants also added per school rather than one. To be quite honest with you, I think we're walking a fine line right now in our middle and our high schools. And I think that these positions will really help keep us on the positive side of that line. I don't think we have a lot of cushion in our schools today. I think it's incredibly important to have those positions that everyone out there has talked about, to start building those relationships with the students. I mean, when we were in closed session tonight, we had examples of how the security assistants in two of our schools were the eyes and ears of other students and how they helped us in those given situations. I think this is probably, I would agree with the superintendent that this, the safety and security is probably the most important thing that has come before us in a long time. And we're not talking just about helping 30 people or 35 people. We're actually talking about improving the learning environment of every single student in the targeted middle schools and in the four high schools that we're talking about tonight. To me, that's a tremendous deal. I mean, I'm very passionate about this. I truly think the personnel issues here, the going to the two per school is really needed. I go in the schools. I see the amount of time our assistant principals in these high schools are spending on discipline issues and not doing other things. I see the amount of time that teachers are spending on disruptive events in the schools, when our administrators should be doing what they're supposed to be doing, the other myriad of tasks, not just focused on discipline. When our teachers really should be spending time teaching the classes and not focusing on those disruptive events. And anything we can do, I think, personnel-wise, building those relationships, and again, I'm shying away right now from the cameras and the like. We can discuss those as part of another discussion. But the real personnel issues, to me, is tremendously important for our schools today. And my preference would be to go with the two security assistants per high school, as the plan outlines. Right now, I don't think we've had a discussion on all of the PBIS. And so I would be very willing to go with the Tier 1, the two high school assistants, the four high school case managers, and come back for a further discussion on the Tier 2. You asked that question. I guess we never came back and truly got around to it, so we'd probably need more information. I'd like to also then, if we come back, follow up on something Ms. Mathiak asked earlier and maybe just get a little more feedback on what's happening on the affiliated alternatives in Shabazz as well. I'd feel more comfortable with that. Ms. Moss, then Mr. Winston.
I also agree with Ms. Silvera about the high school security officers or security assistants. I'm in the high schools with my kids at night, and because they swim and we go to swim practice, and there's nobody there. I mean, it's you know, the kids are there for practices, the coaches are there, but they're right. There is nobody there. There's no security there at all for all those people who are at the schools in the evenings. And I really I'd like to also talk about what Joe said earlier, that he's amazed at how the students interact with the security assistants. I mean, over the years we've cut so many of our psychologists, so many of our social workers, teachers, athletic directors, people who interact with kids. And so here's our opportunity to have somebody whose job it is to walk the halls, to get to know the kids, to greet them in the morning, and to make sure that they're where they need to be. And I think that that's very important. Our buildings are huge. They really are. I don't know how two people can handle it right now. And if they're called away from their buildings 10 times a year, that's 10 days out of the year, or a good part of a day out of the year, that there's nobody in those buildings. You know, I would feel much safer. I think that a lot of people would feel much safer if we had had more of the four in each building. And I also wanted to talk about the PBIS coordinators, kind of just echo what several people have already said. You know, my experience is that now in the school where my children go, there's not an assistant principal. The discipline falls to the learning coordinator and the principal. And the time that the learning coordinator is disciplining the kids, the time the principal is disciplining the kids, that's time that the teachers are not coordinating, the curriculum's not being talked about, modifications aren't being made for kids. So many things are not being done because they have to be the disciplinarians. And there is a core group of kids who really need engagement. You know, I'm in school a lot, and you know, we do need more adults. We need more mentors. You know, that's kind of another tangent, but we need people to just sit down at lunch and say, "How's it going today? Are you going to be sure to go to your club after school?" You know, just encouragement. Just, you know, great, you made it here on time all day this week. You know, just little things like that mean so much to so many of our kids. And I just feel it's that position is very, very important. And same with the case managers. I'd love to see those case managers start with the kids in the second semester of eighth grade. You know, wouldn't it be great if the PBIS coordinators could coordinate with the case managers in high school? Let's identify the kids, the eighth graders, who are going to be going over to high school. And before they even walk in the door, everybody knows who they are. Everybody knows their circumstances, and they can give them a lift. So I really, really feel very strongly about this. So I would actually like to support the PBIS coordinators in all of the middle schools. I think that all of our middle schools need this, as well as the eight security officers and the case managers.
Mr. Winston, followed by Mr. Carlsmith.
Superintendent, again, I just have to ask, in terms of identifying the middle schools that would receive radios and cameras, would that be all of the middle schools, or, I mean?
Yeah, we were going to use the 20,000. I think it's 20,000.
Yeah,
we were going to use the 20,000 to try to answer to the extent we could their request for what each individual one needed.
Each individual
school.
Schools that I guess we'd be looking at, if Wright, Spring Harbor, Cherokee, Tokey, Senate, and Hamilton, if those are the schools that are not in tier in the first priority, they're the second priority schools, they would receive radios and cameras if approved.
If you approve the whole plan, it would be whatever people needed. I mean, they all have radios now. Okay, so some need one more, two more, three more. We put that in just to fit in. And somebody may need a camera at this door. We would look at that and say, okay, that makes sense. And you, that the 20,000 was to be spread among all the schools.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out if any amendments can be friendly. So it looks like the board is the ones that need the PBS, PBIS. Yeah, looks like we need that. Okay, so I guess I'll wait until we talk about it and see if we can come to a consensus, and we'll see.
Mr. Carl Smith, followed by Ms. Cole.
Yeah, I talked earlier about how I feel about security assistance, and I'm more than comfortable approving two per school. You know, we can talk about equipment and radios and stuff like that, but I think we all recognize that this comes down to personnel, and I think that the security assistants are necessary personnel. I'd be open to more discussion about the second tier of PBIS coordinators. I guess what I see, what really stands out to me from this proposal and this discussion, is that we've had a group of all the principals from the middle and high schools and administrators and people who are there who know the deal. And they've come to us and said, this is our priority. And I think that's something to be to be given a great deal of respect. And so I'm very comfortable approving the security assistance, and I'm very happy with this proposal.
Ms. Cole, followed by Ms. Kubza.
I'm going to also echo what Mr. Carl Smith and Ms. Silvera and Ms. Moss have talked about as far as the proposal. I am in favor of the case managers and all of the coordinators, and also the two security assistants. Mostly because in this district we talk about kids transitioning, internal transitions, and that we want them to have consistency. And I think by having these coordinators, the PBIS coordinators, we have staff that we've dedicated that have a specific job. They don't have to allocate another person. They can coordinate across the district. They can work as a team like the middle school principals are doing. And I really agree with what Joe just said. The administration, from what I understand, went to the middle school principals, asked them what their most pressing need was, and this is what they said. They need this personnel. I don't think our middle schools look anything like they did 20 years ago. I think we're asking our schools to do a lot with a lot more expectations on kids. We have families now where both parents are working outside of the home. Kids are not getting the kind of contact that they did many years ago. For the most part, and I just think that we need to have those coordinators in our schools, mostly because we've asked the professionals. They've come back and told us that this is what they need, and I want to give that to them. The other thing I was going to say about security assistance is that there have been times when I've heard of security being called out of the schools, and I think that it's just very important, like Ms. Sino said, to get through that stigma of what a security assistant is and know that this is someone that's going to connect with kids. And finally, I just think that this is a good investment. This is an investment that seems like it, you know, that it might be insurmountable to keep funding this. But on the other hand, these are our kids that we're talking about, and I want our principals and staff to know that their number one job is to teach our kids. It's not to have these principals that have worked so hard to get to the positions that they are to be constantly being pulled away from their main job, which is creating a learning environment. That's what's most important. And we need to provide that for them, just like we try to provide a learning environment in every classroom. So I'm going to support all these personnel changes.
Thank you, Ms. Kubza. Mr. Winston?
I can modify the motion. As a matter of fact, this might go quicker if we
probably
do it this way.
Probably so.
that's what I think. But what I could do is we have the safety and security proposal that's in front of us, and basically I could just go through each of the items that the board has reflected on, and we could vote on each individual item. And I don't know, can we do that?
Well, right now there's a motion and a second, and it could be withdrawn.
Yeah, I'll withdraw the motion.
And but that's going to, we ought to have a confirming vote to withdraw, and then we kind of start over, and then we can go individually.
There's a motion to withdraw the motion. Late. And a second. Any discussion, Mr. Carlsmith?
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, we have no motion.
Okay, I'll start
now,
again.
I just want to make one point first. As you go through each of these, to pass, it's going to require five votes, the supermajority, because it's a change to the budget.
Okay, so just in terms of what we discussed in here, I move that the 2007-2008 MMSD budget be amended to authorize the expenditure of four high school engagement and behavior case managers at a total of $140,000.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Mr. Carlsmith?
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that passes 7-0.
Okay, here's where we get sticky here. I move that the 2007-2008 MMSD budget be amended to authorize the expenditure of PBIS coordinators, five in total, first priority, at a total of $175,000.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Mr. Carlsmith?
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
And that passes 5-2.
Okay. Last motion. I move that the 2007-2008 MMSD budget be amended to authorize the expenditure of $188,000 for high school security assistance, two per school.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
I have
Ms.
one thing. Just when I said before that I wanted to have at least a certain pot of money remaining in order to talk about what other priorities we might have in making that decision, by approving the full amount, we would have about, well, depending on what other decisions we'd make, we'd have about $200,000 remaining. And I'm concerned just that is not enough money to do some of the other things that we've heard about. And while everyone here, while I appreciate the superintendent's proposal and I certainly appreciate everything from the middle and high schools, there are also elementary schools that would also come in and tell us what their needs are. And we have not heard them tonight. And we haven't given them an opportunity to say, what would you propose to do with the additional funding? So we de facto would be making that decision, I think, by taking this vote.
I have a question, Superintendent. On the total amount of the special ed money that's come back in, that wasn't 725.
No, it was 870. It was 870,000. So there's 150,000
over
and above.
Okay.
what's so here.
So the total would be 370.
All right, that
three?
Makes a difference.
Yeah.
If we use the total pot.
There's 150 above that we did this. Not use above this.
I have a question. We have not used our reserve for contingency very heavily this year.
You have
year.
Not used it hard at all.
Okay, so that's still at about 600,000 from. Okay.
All right. Made a difference.
Mr. Carl Smith.
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Mr. Vera, I did not mention in the original motion there were transferring accounts and your superintendent will take care of those.
Thanks. We'll take care of that.
Okay. Thank you.
And next call. As a board, will we have a discussion at some point about the other PBIS coordinators, or by taking this vote, is this a done deal? Or
my understanding was that could come back forward. Was that correct? Tier twos could come back.
Yeah.
Okay. Tier twos. Someone asked for more detail on the $100,000 allocation.
The welcome
center.
We can try to get that back too. Again, for me, the PBIS is the most important.
If there's any needs for Shabazz and the affiliated alternatives.
We'll look at that. Also, by the board, in the process of this, we also will bring to the board some night security assistance for Memorial and LaFollette.
Understanding the urgency of hiring, if we move down and going to the other tier, can we bring this to the board sometime in January?
Yes.
Thank you. Madam President?
Yes.
With the transferring from the funds, one way that we could clean that up in terms of the budget amendment being clear, and I know from speaking to Donna Williams about this, that the preference from the accounting perspective is to exhaust 376,955 from the Fund 10 and then take any remainder from the Fund 10 salary savings. And if we could have a motion to take care of these three expenses by taking first 376,955 from Fund 10, reserve for contingencies, and the remainder from Fund 10 salary savings, that would be helpful to clear up the budget amendment.
Okay. I'll make a motion. Do you want to make a motion? I'll make a motion that we fund the three items of the approved safety and security proposal with $376,955 coming from the Fund 10 Reserve for Contingencies account and the balance coming from the Fund 10 Salary Savings account.
Second.
Any discussion? Mr. Carl Smith.
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. Do we need to... can we just postpone the last
table?
Move the table. Last item on agenda.
Any discussion, Mr. Carl Smith?
Aye.
Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes 7-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Mr. Carl Smith?
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank everyone for a good discussion.
Hey, just because the meeting's over with, Mr. Carl Smith got accepted into Yale University. Yeah.